The court will proceed to the fifth case, Chaudhry v. Nucor Steel Indiana.
Morning, Your Honor. My name is Chris Cody, and I represent the appellant in this case, Subhashi Chaudhry. Thank you for allowing me to be before you this morning and present an argument on his behalf. Mr. Chaudhry presents two issues that he believes, or on which he believes the district court erred in its decision. First, Mr. Chaudhry believes that the district court erred in denying all of his claims under Title VII, and this is his primary contention on appeal. As a secondary matter, Mr. Chaudhry contends that the district court erred in denying his relief under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 60B. With respect to his primary claim, Your Honors, there are two specific claims under Title VII which Mr. Chaudhry believes were timely filed before the EEOC. Primarily, Mr. Chaudhry contends that he was denied, as a result of his race and ethnicity, a raise that would have resulted to him from attending four customer visits per year and a technical class in Cleveland, Ohio. Mr. Chaudhry contends that his supervisors intentionally denied him these visits while they were awarded to other employees of other races. With respect to this claim, Your Honors, the primary piece of evidence to be considered in the record is located on page 21 of the appendix. On that page is located Mr. Chaudhry's charge of discrimination. That contains, in his particular section, approximately four paragraphs, but two numbered paragraphs. The last paragraph is number two. And within that paragraph contains his specific allegation that he has not been allowed to attend customer visits and that he was denied these, which is his contention. Within that, and on the face of that charge of discrimination, Mr. Chaudhry shows that the dates of discrimination occurred from January 31st of 2006 to July 28th of 2006, with the date of the charge being the 28th of 2006. Furthermore, Your Honors, as evidence as to when these events of discrimination occurred, Mr. Chaudhry submitted a supplementation to the EEOC on November 2nd of 2006 that specified that these incidences where he was not invited to attend customer visits occurred in February, March, April, and June of 2006. Based on the 300-day limitation following the event of the discrimination for filing the charge in the EEOC, it's Mr. Chaudhry's contention that this specific claim under Title VII was timely filed before the EEOC and that the district court erred in determining that it was untimely filed.
And that is distinguishable from the – that's why you're saying there are basically two claims, because on the June 03 page raise just in itself, I mean, that's a problem in terms of timing.
Well, I certainly believe, Your Honor,
I know, I understand your position is the district court erred on that, but it seems to me that's more clear-cut than this situation where he's now saying, you know, these various customer visits, he was denied, he applied each of these times. It's not – you're not under a continuum theory there.
No, Your Honor, right. We are not.
And that's – so that's different and distinguishable from the first claim. That's the point you're making.
Yes, Your Honor. With respect to paragraph 2, we are making that. Now, he makes a second – there's a second claim that he also contends was timely filed. And if you look in paragraph 1, which is the paragraph that Your Honor just referenced, we begin with the sentence that he was denied a pay grade 3 years ago. That is problematic. It's problematic under the Ledbetter case, which the appellee has cited. However, we also contend that when taking a look at that paragraph and the charge of discrimination, the way it was drafted, there is more than one charge or allegation of discrimination located in that paragraph. You start off in the first sentence, and you see that he didn't receive a pay grade, which is approved for others 3 years ago. However, as you move down through that paragraph, there are additional allegations of discrimination by his employer located within that that, it's Mr. Chaudhry's contention, are not all qualified by that 3-year time limitation. Specifically, there is an allegation in there that other QC inspectors who work at least 20 times less work make the same pay grade, which is discriminatory. And it's that allegation of discrimination in Title VII that Mr. Chaudhry contends was also timely filed. I would reference, again, the dates discrimination took place that Mr. Chaudhry listed on the charge of discrimination. And, again, taking a look at the standard of review in this case, Your Honors, this case was disposed of through a motion to dismiss. And looking at the Jet Incorporated versus Shell Oil case, the standard would be to show whether or not there's a possible interpretation of a complaint that could state a claim. Mr. Chaudhry contends that through this EEOC charge and then event, and then again, looking at his complaint where those allegations were reiterated in paragraphs 32 to 34 and 40, that these are separate charges. There is a reference in the supplementation that he issued to the EEOC that this discrimination continued or existed on October 29th of 2006. And it's his contention that there is a set of facts under which that would be timely and that further discovery and further proceedings are appropriate beyond this motion to dismiss stage on that particular claim as well. There are a couple of cases, Your Honor, that the appellee cites that the appellant believes are distinguishable in this case. First, the Ledbetter case was heavily relied upon, and that was a Supreme Court case by the district court and then also by the appellee. We believe that case is distinguishable from the incident proceedings because in that case there was a pay discrimination instance that happened several, I believe, years prior to the filing of the EEOC charge, and the petitioner in that case sought to recover for continuing discrimination as a result of the lowered paychecks that she had received. In this case, we're talking about an instance of fresh discrimination, not just continuing lower pay from the pay grade that Mr. Chaudhry didn't receive 3 years ago. So if there's an instance of fresh discrimination, and I believe the Ledbetter case pointed that out specifically in its language and decision, then you have a brand new EEOC charge, thank you, Your Honor, to fill out. Finally, Your Honors, with respect to the 60B motion, again, this is a secondary point, but with reference to a case out of the Tenth Circuit, Mr. Chaudhry believes that the district court should have allowed him to amend his complaint to add a claim under Section 1981 because the law did change through the Ledbetter case in the process of his litigation and that it would be within the interest of justice for him to be allowed to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cody. Mr. Patton?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Mark Patton. I represent Nucor Corporation and Nucor Steel Indiana in this matter. The district court's decision to the two orders the district court made in this case, specifically Judge McKinney dismissing the case and refusal to grant Rule 60 relief, were both proper and should be affirmed. As to the first decision dismissing the case, before the district court, Mr. Chaudhry argued that he had one pay discrimination claim and one hostile work environment claim. Specifically, he argued his pay discrimination claim constituted a continuum, which began in 2003 as a result of a refusal to give a raise and was evidenced by the fact that he now has to work harder for the pay that he's receiving. And he also used the fact that he wasn't notified of an opportunity to go on to a customer visit, which if he would have gone on to a customer visit, assuming he would, and then assuming he took a class, then maybe it would have caused him to be eligible for a raise.
And that's the part I would like you to address, because doesn't that, the fact that he was denied the pay raise every year because he wasn't allowed to go on those visits and so he couldn't become eligible, isn't that what distinguishes his situation from the Ledbetter situation? Because in Ledbetter, the plaintiffs conceded that no pay decision had been made within the statutory time frame.
Yes, Your Honor, but it's our contention that this argument was never pressed before the district court. In fact, Mr. Chaudhry argued the opposite. Specifically, and I refer, Your Honors, to page 17 and 18 of the appendix, Mr. Chaudhry, in his response to Nucor's motion to dismiss, argued that he had one pay discrimination claim. In fact, he said it would be unreasonable for me to bring three separate claims of pay discrimination, specifically the fact that I have to work hard for the pay that I'm receiving, the fact that there was a 2003 denial to receive a raise, and the fact that I wasn't informed of customer visits. He argued that would be unreasonable. He presented that to the district court and a continuum claim. The district court properly dismissed the claim, after which Mr. Chaudhry filed a Rule 15 motion to amend his complaint and filed another response to reply to that motion to Nucor's response. But now on appeal, he's arguing that no, in fact, there were three separate claims the whole time. This was despite his argument before the district court.
So is it your position that once an employee is denied a raise, once he's barred forever from bringing a Title VII claim if he fails to file an EEOC charge about that first decision, even if he continues to be turned down for raises?
No, Your Honor, not at all. It's our position that an employee has to press an argument, has to present an argument before a district court for it to be heard on appeal. But that's a fundamental principle. If, under Mr. Chaudhry's theory, district court was incorrect, the district court should have been presented with that argument and given the opportunity to correct a mistake. But instead, it wasn't presented to the district court, and it's now presented on appeal for the first time. And in fact, such a decision or such a ruling would require the district courts to basically ignore an argument a plaintiff makes and pour through the plaintiff's pleadings to determine if there are any additional arguments that the plaintiffs could have raised. But in fact, a district court has the right to rely on plaintiff's argument, i.e., in this case, that there was a continuum discrimination claim, and properly dismiss that claim. And as to the second order, Court Major Honor, the Rule 60 decision, it's important to point out that Mr. Chaudhry did not file a Rule 60 motion for relief. What Mr. Chaudhry did was, after this case was dismissed, he filed a Rule 15 motion to amend his complaint. District Court properly ruled that after a complaint's been dismissed, there's nothing really to amend. And Mr. Chaudhry delayed, and on, you know, I believe, the 12th day after the order, delayed and lost the right to file a Rule 59, but filed a reply to the motion to amend his complaint, and in that reply argued that the district court, in its discretion, would have the right to treat his Rule 15 motion as a Rule 60 motion to vacate the judgment. The district court denied this relief and said even if, the district court went on to say, even if Mr. Chaudhry had filed a Rule 60 motion to vacate the judgment, this is not an instance where the judgment should be vacated. In this instance, it's not as if the Ledbetter decision came out after judgment was entered. The Ledbetter decision, as the district court pointed out, was issued 3 months before Nucor's motion to dismiss. And in those 3 months' time, Mr. Chaudhry could have amended his complaint at any time. And not only that, Mr. Chaudhry could have amended his complaint after Nucor sought dismissal of the case under Ledbetter, but chose not to amend his complaint at that time, and instead waited for the case to be dismissed. And it was only upon dismissal of the case and judgment was entered that he moved to amend his complaint. And a couple of issues, Your Honor, if I may, I'd like to point out that were raised in counsel's argument is that the standard of review in this case, Mr. Chaudhry is arguing that he should have the benefit of de novo review and be entitled to that review. Once again, it's Nucor's position that because the argument is waived, he should not be entitled or have the benefit of de novo review. In fact, it's our position that given de novo review, that would essentially allow plaintiffs to test one legal theory before a district court, have that theory fail, and then on appeal try a completely new legal theory. And ultimately, it's not the district court's responsibility to determine every potential argument a plaintiff may raise. The district court can rightly depend on plaintiff's arguments before the court. Mr. Chaudhry is pointing out to the EEOC charge that he filed in this case, but it's Nucor's position that ultimately the arguments that are brought before the district court are found in the complaint and are found in the motions and the briefs filed before the court. And in those briefs, Mr. Chaudhry argued that he had a continuum theory of pay discrimination, which stemmed from 2003. He didn't argue that he had a separate and independent claim that he wasn't allowed to go on customer visits, which may have led to a raise. And because of that, because he never pressed that argument before the district court, nor gave the district court an opportunity to rule on that argument, that he cannot now argue that on appeal. And if there's nothing further, Nucor respectfully requests that Judge McKinney's decisions in this case, decision to dismiss the case, the pay discrimination claim, and the decision to refuse to vacate the judgment should be affirmed.
Ben. Cody.
And why don't you begin with that last point, that you didn't raise this particular argument about the discrete activities for each year. Begin with that and why we should look at that now.
Yes, Your Honor.
When the district court didn't have a chance to rule on it.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that the district court did have a chance to rule on that. We did not represent Mr. Chaudhry in the proceedings below, but in examining counsel who did and taking a look at their brief.
You did raise the issue?
It was argued before the court?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that the counsel who represented Mr. Chaudhry before the court did raise the issue that there were separate claims, specifically looking at the pay grade increase from his inability to attend customer visits was a separate issue. And I'm looking, Your Honor, at the...
When did he do this?
It is in his response to the...
Motion to dismiss?
Plaintiff's motion to dismiss, Your Honor. There were distinct paragraphs, and I've cited these on page 2 and 3 of my reply brief in this case, Your Honor, in which Mr. Chaudhry argued that there was a distinction between plaintiff arguing that he was performing duties involving a greater workload other than OCIs, other QCIs with an identical job description, and informing all QCIs except for plaintiff of opportunities to visit customers and thus become eligible for an increase in pay grade. He argued that both of these activities on the part of the defendant were enumerated in the EEOC charge of discrimination and in the complaint, citing to the specific paragraphs of the complaint where it's identified. And again, they argued that these activities were timely under the EEOC charge because they were done within the 300-day EEOC filing requirement. That's again raised on page 2 under a citation from the appendix of page 17 from that the response brief that Mr. Chaudhry filed, where he again identified these two activities as being enumerated in the EEOC charge of discrimination and complaint. I believe.
You can finish your thought.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. That this presentation is sufficient to have presented it for the district court's review and has preserved the issue on appeal.
Thank you, Mr. Cody. Thank you, Mr. Patton. Case is taken under advisement. The court will take a short